This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our October 23rd, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we're here to help you become an above average investor. And most people are bogged down, or at least their returns are bogged down by poor decision making. And usually that has to do with emotions and lack of knowledge as well. And so our job here each and every day is to help temper your emotions, get back to the facts, and get as many facts as you possibly can, right? So keeping your financial footing is essential. And it's essential to achieve any kind of success in investing. Now, all of this is to get you on your way to financial freedom. And that is why you're here listening to the show today, is you probably either strive for financial freedom or you want to continue to have financial freedom and make good investment decisions and money decisions overall. Now, of course, getting on the right path early is best. It's important to start as early as possible. Now, our friends at Investopedia came up with the list of 7 financial lessons to master by the time you're 30. But of course, it's never too late to get your act together. Just because you're past 30 doesn't mean that you have checked all the boxes, right? Maybe you skip through lesson number 1, and that's actually sticking to a budget. Now, most 20-somethings have played around with the idea of a budget and have used maybe budgeting apps and have even read an article or two about the importance of creating a budget. However, very few individuals actually stick to their budget. Now, they say once you turn 30, it's time to ditch the wishy-washy process of budgeting and start allocating where every dollar you earn goes. So lesson 2 and 3 are about spending. And spending is just about common sense. We always say, spend less than you earn. That's the simple guide to gathering and accumulating and growing your wealth. And that's the millionaire next door idea. Now I'm going to skip to lesson number 4 quickly and educate yourself about your student loans. Certainly you want to pay those down, but you also want to make sure you're doing the right order. A student loan debt isn't fun, but it's usually low cost debt. So if you have other debt, credit card debt, car debt, etc., probably shouldn't be your first priority. Now, a 2016 study by Citizens Bank found that half of borrowers don't fully grasp the process of how student loans work, and it makes it harder for them to understand how to get to a place where they're free of the debts, like student loans and all the other ones. You know, it's easy to fall behind when you're not budgeting, you're not really keeping track. Especially in a time when credit is easy flowing, right? You rack up a little debt, there's another credit card that comes along the way, and you can transfer, do a balance transfer, and you can play all the games, and you can continue to spend and overspend. And that's easy when times are good, when banks are lending freely. But the opposite is true when maybe the economy's not so good. You know, that's why delinquencies rise dramatically. People get laid off, banks are no longer lending as freely as they were, and suddenly that debt becomes a much bigger burden than it was when, you know, times were pretty good. And you're always going to have these ebbs and flows of good times and bad times, right? In your job, in your career, but also in the economy as well. And that's going to certainly affect you. So vigilance in keeping a watchful eye on your spending levels, on your debt levels, and focusing on paying down the right debts. And it'll get you to a place of financial freedom a lot quicker. Now, do you have questions about, you know, the personal finance side? We talk a lot about investing. This is Invest Talk after all. But personal finance is probably more important than the investing side. Maybe not as fun. Maybe not as interesting. But saving is the number one factor in reaching financial freedom. It's not how much you earn on your money. It's how much you are saving. How much you earn your money is important, but how much you are saving is more important. Now, is there anything you can do to help keep debt under control? Maybe you have a question, or maybe you have an experience on what you did that you want to share with everybody to pay down debt, make smarter decisions. And sometimes making smarter decisions is about setting up processes, setting up easy things to do, right? Automatic savings. Like, that's why 401ks work so well, because it's automatic. You don't have to go do it. There's probably other places in your life where you could set up things that automatically save you money, prevent you from spending more money, and hopefully saving you money. But we can talk about anything that's on your mind. I want to hear from you. We can talk live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. But let's start off by answering a question from our 24-hour listener line. And that number, as always, is 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin. This is Chris from St. Louis. I had a question. When a stock pushes through resistance, like a new 52-week high, is there a way you determine how high it may go past that as far as when the next level of resistance may occur, like a Fibonacci retracement or an ABCD pattern? Or is there some rhyme or reason that you go by? Listen on the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
There are what are called Fib extensions, Fibonacci extensions. He mentioned that, Fibonacci retracements, and that there's extensions as well, 618, 1.38. So basically, think of the movement of a stock. Say it went from its bottom a couple years ago was at 100, it goes to 200, it's breaking out. A Fib extension would be 38% above that $100 move, right? Which would be $38. So 238 would be probably a natural resistance level. Also 618, the most powerful Fib extension, Fib retracement, 618. So that would be $61.80. So 261.80. So, you know, that's I'm trying to use round numbers to make it simple for everybody. So yeah, that's one way. But once again, it's we like to use multiple factors, and when the stock's at new highs, it's really hard to really give it a great resistance level. And really, the what I do at those levels is watch the action, right? If there's a major reversal signal, reversal day, kind of similar to what you saw in the indexes today, actually, at those levels, then I'll give some big credence to that resistance level. But if it just goes up there and it kind of chatters around for a little while, doesn't really have big volume, it doesn't really show any signs of reversing, then, you know, I'm not going to freak out about that resistance level. But it's something that you should watch. But a great question, because that's difficult, especially in today's market when you have growth stocks breaking out to new highs and momentum stocks doing well. It's hard to find a place to take profits and know when to take profits. For me, it's more about stocks that are breaking new highs, that have broken out. It's trailing stops, having a trailing stop, and that could be a moving average, could be a percentage. You know, I like a 50-day moving average. That tends to be a pretty good support level. But a lot of stocks, if you look back in their history, they tend to find support at certain levels. It could be the 20-day, could be the 50, could be the 100-day moving average. And, you know, those can be significant. And if it breaks those levels, then maybe you get out. So there's a lot of ways that you can play with outs. Not every stock is the same, but those are a couple pointers that I hope will help you out. So what's on the list of topics today? There are many pitfalls and traps that can destroy an investor's portfolio instantly or over time. And if you invest based on emotions, that can happen. So how to avoid investing distractions? That's our main talking point. I have some others as well that are on my mind, like what money milestones to hit in every decade? What money milestones to hit in every decade? This will go from your early 20s all the way to your late 60s. So if you're within that time frame, I'm going to give you some milestones of where you should probably be, because you know saving financial freedom is about hitting goals, and I think that's going to be a good one for I think everybody out there, because you'll probably land somewhere on that timeline. Also, mutual funds versus ETFs. A lot of people talk about ETFs, indexing. What are the difference between ETFs and mutual funds, and how does that play into your decision-making process? And then lastly, housing starts. What's going on with that? And there's a very interesting statistic about working age population growth that is saying a little something about the housing market kind of more in the longer term. You know, I'll talk a little about the short term, but longer term is also something to consider as well. So that's what's on my mind. It's what I want to talk to you about on today's show. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein. I want to hear from you. Whatever's on your mind, anything that's on your mind financially, give us a call. I want to hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, it's Daniel from Orlando, Florida. Been a long time listener. I have a question on AT&T. Thinking about adding it for a long-term IRA. I'm obviously sitting right about that 52-week low right now, and I think it's a good entry point. Interested to see what you think about the new Time Warner deal and obviously future growth earnings or earnings growth prospects. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at AT&T. I don't think I need to explain who they are. Obviously, one of the largest telecom companies in the world, about a $216 billion market cap, enterprise value of about $337 billion. So that means they have roughly $121 billion in net debt on their balance sheet, which is quite a lot. And I'm a little worried, you asked about the Time Warner deal, but also you have to lump in DirecTV, because they bought DirecTV a few years back as well, added a lot of debt because of that, and they lost a lot of subscribers, and they put a lot of money into cable television and spent a lot of money on acquiring those two companies. And you know, we're in an era of unplugging, right? Cutting the cord. And I think that's only accelerating, maybe not accelerating dramatically, but I think it's only going to increase over time as the population becomes more tech savvy by just simply younger people getting older into the age where they might be buying cable, and older people either dying off or learning themselves that they can cut the cable in retirement. So, you know, I really think that those acquisitions could hamstring the company. And that's why I'm not a big fan of AT&T. Even though valuation-wise, it's not that expensive. It really isn't. But revenues are down, falling not dramatically, a couple percent. But I don't like that. And I think that dividend is getting a little stretched. It's not, you know, going anywhere soon. But it's not a name that I'm buying at these levels. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. Don't save your question. This hour is all yours. Jump in. Let's talk. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve or Justin. This is Ken from Iowa. And I have a basic asset allocation question. Recently retired, 50-50 portfolio right now. And my question is, of the stock portion of the portfolio, and basically we're talking mutual funds here, I realize the S&P 500 has a lot of sales from international markets, but what allocation would you recommend in terms of emerging markets, other international investments? Thank you.
Well, that's a great question, especially in today's world where we have a pretty overvalued equity market here in America. Not that there aren't those outside of the U.S. However, there's a lot more value to be found abroad. And so if you're looking at, and you've studied long-term correlations and valuations, over the longer term, at these price levels, foreign stock allocation is likely going to do better than domestic allocation. Now, obviously, it depends on what time frame you're talking about, but the point is that you should have some exposure if you have equity allocation in your portfolio. Now, how much? That kind of depends on how much risk you want to take. Even though the valuations tend to be better today, doesn't mean that they won't be more volatile, right? Foreign stocks won't be more volatile than domestic stocks. And that can be for various reasons. Geopolitical issues could crop up that would create a lot of volatility. You also have foreign currency volatility that certainly plays into any foreign investment, whether that's a real estate or equities or bonds, whatever it is. So you'll have an added layer of potential risk, but it also can be a tailwind for you if the dollar weakens, which it, you know, kind of has over the past year or so. So what percentage? It's hard for me to say without understanding your full financial picture, your full portfolio, which areas of the market you're looking at, you know, the foreign markets. You talked about emerging markets a little bit. Certainly that's going to be the higher risk, but it also probably has the best valuation in the market today long term. So based on your risk tolerance, I would say if you had high risk tolerance, you want to have maybe 10-15% in emerging markets. If your risk tolerance isn't that high, probably wouldn't exceed, you know, maybe 5%. So it's a hard question to ask, really. But I like that you're thinking about it. I like that you recognize that foreign equity exposure in this market is probably a good idea, but we would need a deeper dive in your personal situation. If you ever want to call our office, shoot us an email, go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Justin, Contact Steve button. Those emails go directly to us, and we can answer you a little more specific, so you can set up a time to talk with me or Steve on more detail. We can go over your portfolio, etc., and give you a little more detailed explanation and advice, which we do every week with listeners. So hope that helped a little bit. It probably didn't give you an exact answer, but hopefully led you down the path, or is leading you down the path of the right answer for you. Now, our main talking point today is about ways to avoid investment distractions. Now, in today's world with social media and obviously television, CNBC, there's a lot of talking heads and noise that will distract you. And it can also be family and friends, especially in today's world with Bitcoin and the high-flying tech stocks. It can be, you could have FOMO, right? Fear of missing out. And that's certainly a natural human emotion that can distract you. So what are some ways to avoid investment distraction? First off is having a goal, right? Having hopefully multiple goals. And when you have a goal, you start to formulate a plan, at least you should. And that will help you determine the number of years that you want to be in an investment. And keep your eye focused on those longer term goals and the fact that you picked that particular investment to achieve a particular goal. And that hopefully will avoid you being swayed by your emotions and the noise that's around you. Right, even though the stock market's up a lot since the bottom in 2009, stocks generally averaged in the long term, including dividends, you know, 8 to 10%. Certainly we've gotten more than that annualized over the past 8 years or so. So if you are thinking you're going to get the same 200% return over the next 8 years, from now, you're most likely going to be off by a wide margin. So if you have a goal, multiple goals, and a plan, then you're less likely to be swayed by that noise and distracted. Number two, save early. People who start investing in their 20s usually have an advantage over those who start later. It's obvious. Talked about earlier, saving is the most important thing. And it's never too late. So once you start that, it's very easy to stay on track. Once you create that habit, right, like a 401k, like I said before, it becomes a lot easier. Lastly, number three is diversify. Not lastly, sorry. Lastly for this segment. I'll get to more later. Don't be too concentrated in one asset class. Don't get caught up in the emotions, right, in chasing a particular sector area of the market just because you saw the returns last year, the last 3 years. It's not the way to invest. Now, coming up on tomorrow's Invest Talk, we have help if you're setting your portfolio's asset allocation for the first time. So that's tomorrow. What's your topic today, though? I want to hear from you at 888-99-CHART.
Our Invest Talk podcast continues next. But first, a couple of words about our webinar coming up May 31st. Licensed real estate agent and investor Chevy Akerson joins Invest Talk's own financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein for 1 hour about real estate. And they'll show you the things you need to know to be successful, the basics of residential real estate investing. It's a free live webinar, May 31st, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific Time, with plenty of time for your questions, too. Learn about the tools and strategies the professionals use. Gain insights to help you reduce risk and maximize your invested dollar. Whether you're just getting started or currently own rental properties, this webinar will shed light on how professionals look at investing in real estate. The Basics of Residential Real Estate Investing, a free live webinar, May 31st, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific Time. All you do is register. Just go to investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's. InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. Now let's continue with the podcast. This is InvestTalk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective where you can talk directly with a registered investment advisor. So bring your questions. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 25 minutes left, so if you're going to call in, you probably want to do it sooner rather than later. Now, before the break, I was talking about things that can distract you from coerce you to make bad investment decisions, right? Number five is hire a money pro. If you don't have the time and the ability to do this yourself, there's nothing wrong with hiring an expert. You know, that's why we're in business, because most people have jobs and they don't have time to study the markets, study companies, study asset allocation and economic numbers and charts, etc. A lot goes into this. So you certainly can do it on your own, and that's why we're here. We're here to help people do it on their own, but ultimately we know a subset of our listeners are going to give up and they're going to turn to us. And that's just, frankly, that's you know, why we do the show, part of why we do the show, right? So number seven is avoiding fads. Now, some investors love to invest in the hottest growth stocks or in big fads. You know, in today's world, it's either cloud computing or robotics or online shopping, etc. And this is where bursting of bubbles can really crush your investing efforts, your saving efforts, your goals. Think about real estate in the mid-2000s. I know I'm currently doing the show from Laguna Beach, California, in Orange County, and this was one of the meccas of the real estate bubble. And I heard dozens and dozens and dozens of people that I know that were all their assets were in real estate, and they were leveraged to the hilt. And many of them filed bankruptcy, were financially destroyed because they were chasing a fad. Same thing happened in 2000, right, with the first tech bubble, Tech Bubble 1.0. We're in Tech Bubble 2.0 right now, but Tech Bubble 1.0 was back then, and many people, once again, were chasing the fad. Commodities as well. Commodities crashed in 2007, right? And that was a big fad as well. So there's always going to be the next investment fad. Think of Bitcoin today, right? I think who I saw on CNBC, some guy somewhere in Europe, I was in Northern Europe, they sold all their possessions. They had 3 cars, a house, everything, put it in Bitcoin. They moved the whole family, I think of 5 kids, to a campsite, and they put all their money in Bitcoin. I hate to say it, but it's probably not going to work out very, very well for them. But, this is a hallmark of bubbles, manias. It's a hallmark of human emotion. But 9 times out of 10, it doesn't really work out very well. Next is study great investors. Right? Warren Buffett and Peter Lynch, they don't act like dogs chasing their tail every time the market goes up or down. They don't get caught up in the excitement of a bull market or the panic of a bear market. Right? Because they have goals. They have strategies. They focus on the facts. And they don't get let the emotions clog up their mind and their thinking. That tends to lead to bad decisions. The old saying by Warren Buffett, be greedy when others are fearful, and be fearful when others are greedy. Peter Lynch talks about investing in things that you know and like, and use that knowledge to build a portfolio, build a strategy. Maybe that's what you need to do. Maybe that is the road that you go down, and your focus. And that's really what it comes down to, is focus. Create goals, create a plan, create a strategy, and focus on them. Everything else is just noise. Another one that's great is reinvest your dividends. When you're getting dividends from stocks, even interest from bonds, there's a lot of power to that. And I think it allows a lot of people to focus more long term. Because, it might go down, but they're still getting that dividend. And they're reinvesting the dividend. And they're reinvesting it, if the market's down or that stock is down, at a lower price with a higher dividend yield. And hopefully you're investing in companies that are growing their dividend over time. So dividend investing can be a great way to, or a helpful way at least, to keep your eye on the ball. Then there's obviously asset allocation. That's certainly critical. Making smart asset allocation decisions. We talk about having a portfolio that makes sense for your risk tolerance level. Also very, very important. Let's go to Will in San Diego. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good, Justin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. What can I do for you?
Well, my symbol is PAA, and I believe it's a pipeline company. And I was looking at this one. It looks like it's a little bit better than a lot of the other pipeline companies from a valuation standpoint. So I wanted to get your take on it.
First off, what type of account would you be putting this in?
Oh, just a regular stock account. It's not, retirement account or anything.
Okay. That's one thing to consider when you're looking at a master limited partnership, which is that's what this is. If it is in a retirement account, there is some limitations to how much you're allowed to have without filing a separate tax return, etc. But you're not, so that's fine. But understand, first off, it does pay a 6% dividend yield, but that is going to be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. Do you know that?
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Okay. So this is a name that has certainly fallen over the last, call it, 2 years or so. It was hit a high of about 60 back in 2014 or so, end of 2014. hit a low of about 15, and now it's trading at around $20 a share. So it's certainly down from the highs. For one of the main reasons is oil prices have fallen, and their business did suffer, but it's coming back a little bit over the last three quarters. You're getting revenue growth again. You're getting earnings growth last quarter, which is a positive. So things are kind of stabilizing, which is good. They have a decent amount of debt that's I'm not a big fan of. You know, this is, and any of these oil names are certainly going to be higher risk. And do you understand that factor?
Right. Oh yeah.
Are you okay with that?
Yes, I'm okay. But I figure since it's come so far down from its highs, that maybe now is a good time to be getting in for a long-term investment.
Yeah, I don't say it's not a bad time. I do think it looks like it's headed for one more drop, maybe back into that mid-teen area. And that's probably where I'd pick it up. And then I would have a stop below the low. So the low from March or so of 2016. So if it breaks below that, then I go, okay, there's probably some bigger issues with this company. Maybe there's a potential bankruptcy problem because of their level of debt. But... you know, that's why I kind of like it down there in the mid-teens, because you have a pretty tight out. It's certainly still a good company. It's making money. And as long as oil prices kind of stay around these levels in mid you know, 40s, 50s or so, you should be able to have this type of earnings power for the company. And at these valuation levels, it's not bad. I don't love it. I don't think it's drastically undervalued, but I would say it's slightly undervalued, but the technical picture is not strong. So I want to get this in around the 15 level, and sorry, let's call it 17 level, and the out from the March of 2016. If it breaks below that on a weekly basis, then I'd be worried that there's bigger issues, and I would use that as your out.
Okay, so you're telling me basically put it on my watch list then.
Yeah, because technically it's just very, very weak. And I'm not seeing a support level until kind of the mid-teens. And, you know, you're at about $20 a share still. So that's another 20% down from here. And so I would be a little weary of that. But definitely keep it on your watch list. In that mid-teen area, I like it with a stop below the 2016 low.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks. No problem. Thanks for the call. That was Plains All American Pipeline. They're at Master Limited Partnership. And what do they do? Engage in the transportation, storage, terminaling, and gathering assets in the oil and gas industry. So pretty standard. Let's go to Thomas in Hayward. How you doing, Thomas?
Hey, Justin. Fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. What can I do for you?
I had a question about, I want to actually get your take on taking a loan from a 401k to pay off credit card debt or just short-term debt. What are your feelings on this? I have a 401k loan out right now, and it seems like the returns, the interest is just going back into my 401k. Is that how it's supposed to work?
Yeah, that is how it works. You're kind of paying yourself interest. Which is better than paying the bank, right? So I don't hate the idea. It's certainly actually up there on the list of options if you do have credit card debt and et cetera. But you know, you don't want to abuse it. A lot of people might abuse it and pay off the debt, and then they start racking up more credit card debt while they're paying back their 401k loan. And then when that's paid back, they borrow against it again to pay off that debt. So, you know, I think the root of the issue is, why do you have those other debts? And I don't think it's a terrible idea. One thing that you have to worry about is, do you get a match from your employer?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You have to look to see if getting that loan might jeopardize it, or because is all that money going towards the loan and you're not getting that match anymore? Is that something that's a factor?
No, not at all. It's completely separate. My match is still going in, and then my repayment is coming out of my paycheck automatically.
Yeah. Like I said, it's not a terrible idea, but it can be abused, which is what worries me. And you're certainly going to be missing out on potential gains on your investment and your retirement during that time that you're paying that money back. But that means you're also not paying that high credit card interest as well. So there's two ways to look at it. I don't hate it. It's certainly up there with the options of ways to reduce your debt, reduce your debt burden and carrying cost of the debt. But you need to address the root cause of why you have that debt. And if that's fixed, then over time you pay back that loan and then you've created the right money habits so you don't have to get there again in the future.
Okay. Well, then I guess that kind of leads to another question, if I may. Should I use my savings that's invested in my brokerage account to pay off the credit card debt? I feel like I'm getting a better return, a much better return
yes.
on my investments.
So when you're paying off any debt, right? You have savings, you're paying off any debt. What you have to realize is if you take that money and you pay it down, you're basically guaranteeing yourself the return of whatever you would be paying on that debt, right? Because if you allow that to be outstanding, say you have $10,000 in savings and you have a credit card debt of $10,000, you're going to be racking up interest on that credit card when you could be using that savings and putting it towards the credit card and not paying that interest. So you definitely want to use as much savings as you're comfortable with to pay down as much debt as you can. And you obviously want to start with the highest interest debt that you have out there, which is probably one of your credit cards.
Very good. Okay.
Make sense?
I like that. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So it's like I'm giving myself whatever my credit card is, 12 or 13%.
Exactly. And it's risk-free, and it's hard to beat that, especially at credit card interest rates.
Sure. Yeah. Good deal.
Thanks for the call, Thomas.
You're the best. Thank you very much.
No problem. Now, our free risk analysis tool not only evaluates and quantifies your risk tolerance, but also is the first step in determining if your current retirement portfolio or investment portfolio, with its mix of stocks, funds, bonds, cash, etc., is exposing you to too much risk or maybe not enough risk. And does it jive with your goals and your financial picture? So it's an easy-to-use tool that's right there. It's free on our site. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then look for free risk analysis.
Did you know that when you roll over your 401k, after-tax contributions can only be rolled into an IRA or a retirement plan that keeps track of the taxable and non-taxable parts? Maybe you better talk to the 401k rollover experts at KPP Financial. They'll help you make the best possible choices for your situation. Just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin and type 401k rollover on investtalk.com.
You're listening to Invest Talk. We have just a few moments remaining in the hour. About, call it 8 minutes left in the show. So if there's still time, there is still time for your call. You can reach me right now with your question at 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk. It at 99-CHART, it at 992-4278. We have 5 minutes left. Let's go to Dustin in the Bay Area. How you doing, Dustin?
I'm doing good. I have a question for you on mutual funds. I'm just starting to get into the market, and I was wondering if that's a good base, and if so, is this a good time to invest in?
Well, the market is certainly expensive overall. There are pockets of value and an opportunity. Mutual funds are difficult to take advantage of that in this market because mutual funds tend to be pretty diversified and broad-based. But there's also a lot of different types of mutual funds out there. So understand that as well. Not all mutual funds are traded equal. Not all equity funds are traded equal. So, but mutual funds are a good place for you to start because you have access to index funds, actively managed funds, all types, all areas of the marketplace, from large cap stocks to small cap stocks to foreign stocks to corporate bonds to treasury bonds, etc. So you have access to all different types of investments. So that's a positive. They tend to be easy to trade right through your brokerage firm. Hopefully, you want to never buy any loaded mutual funds. Anything that has a load, you should stay away from. But it is a good place for you to start, understand the gyrations of the market, the risk level of particular areas of the market. So there's nothing wrong with that. Mutual funds, ETFs, I think they both are good starter investments for people who probably, you know, I'm assuming you don't have a ton of money. That's why you're just starting, right?
I'm trying to
keep something
outside my 401k.
Very simple. Yeah. And so but you're just kind of starting your investment learning process, right?
Yes, very much.
Okay. Yeah. So you want to keep what's good about mutual funds or ETFs, they give you instant diversification. You're going to be invested across a broad range of assets, but usually tied to a specific area of the marketplace. So when you're invested in them, you see the gyrations, you understand kind of how they move and how much they move, you'll start getting a sense of the risk in the market, both on the upside and the downside. I would definitely be a fan of mutual funds for any beginner.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Dustin. No problem. Now, reaching your goals are all about creating milestones, and it can be difficult to know where you should be at particular stages of your life. You know, while most people drastically undersave for retirement, you may not know how behind you are. So I'm going to go over quickly the stages that you should be in based on where you are in life. Right, what goals and milestones you should have reached. Now, in your early 20s, you start saving about 10% of your earnings in your 401k. That's where you should start. Okay, by your late 20s, maybe call it 30 years old, you should have the equivalent of about your salary. Whatever your salary is per year, that's how much you probably should have saved in 401ks and IRAs, etc. In your early 30s, you should start knocking out any debt, student debt, car debt, credit card debt, maybe even mortgage debt if you have a mortgage. Start paying those down. By your mid-30s, you should have about twice the amount of your salary saved. So if you're making $75,000 a year, by your mid-30s, you should have about $150,000 saved. Now, in your early 40s, you want to increase your retirement account contributions. Go from 10 to probably 15%. Right? It's getting closer, and you're going to need to accelerate those savings. You want to do it earlier than 40s if you can, but definitely by early 40s you want to get there. By your late 40s, you want to look for additional income sources. Could be a new job, cutting expenses. By 55, aim for 4 to 5 times your salary. Late 50s, add your catch-up contribution in your 401k, IRA, etc. Early 60s, you want to hold off on Social Security benefits as long as you can. Try to get to 870 before you take those. And by your late 60s, that's when you start to transition into retirement. That's a good blueprint for everybody. Time for the close. We've used up our hour already. A reminder that Steve will be spending a day in San Jose on the 8th of November. It'll be his last visit there before the end of the year. So if you'd like an individual retirement review with Steve, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Glad you could be with us. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, I want to thank you for being part of the program. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.